This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Friday today. It's actually not Thursday because I goofed yesterday. I'm going to turn on the air conditioning. It's a little warm today, but still a beautiful, beautiful day. I actually goofed yesterday. I couldn't do the podcast immediately after leaving work because I had to run by my dad's house to help him with the same thing I've been helping with him with for the past week, ever since we got him out of the hospital. I'll talk about that in a minute. And then it was my wedding anniversary, so we hadn't planned to go out or anything, because usually we wait to celebrate till we have some time. But that may be kind of squeegeed a little bit here because my dad being in the hospital, but we'll get that figured out. So I ran by and I was looking for some flowers for my wife, couldn't find any, so I picked up a plant, which she says she really liked, so ta-da, that's good. And a card and some M&Ms, you know, just kind of happy anniversary, ta-da type thing. Anyway, so I did that. Well, I came out of Walmart and I was supposed to do the podcast after I got back in my car in Walmart and then, you know, drive home. And I guess I was in a hurry to get home. I don't know. I didn't even think about doing the podcast until I drove up to my mailbox at that spot where I usually say I'm getting my mail. And I thought I was supposed to do the podcast. So anyway, so I'm doing it today. It's Friday, but it's still this week. Still got to keep this streak going. It's been a good week. It's been an interesting week. My dad came home from the hospital on Friday night, and he came home with a bile drain from his gallbladder, and then he also came home with a catheter that's dumping into a urine bag. So, you know, it's been a week of new experiences. I told some buddies at work that I hope I'm not cursed now, because in the Bible, when one of the sons of Noah looked on his father's nakedness, he was cursed. To get my dad out of the hospital, we had to fish the catheter bags through his underwear and his pants and everything. And so, yeah. So there you go. And then once they sent us home, as they were sending us home, they said, well, yeah, and here's, you know, you really need to drain these bags twice a day. And then, you know, you're going to need to pour it into these measuring cups and then see, you know, write down how much it was and what time it was taken and blah, 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 blah. So I've been doing that all week, too. And that's been going fine. It's, you know, I'm not squeamish. So I grew up in the Philippines and seen plenty of things. So that's no problem, except one night, apparently I was tired. I think it was Wednesday. I was fasting on Wednesday, and I, you know, emptied the bag with the urine and got it. And as I was picking up the container to put it back on the shelf so I could get it level, so I could measure them, at the bottom of the container hit the top of the vanity and sloshed everything out. So I'm wiping everything. Oh, Phil, I'm so sorry. My dad said, I said, Bob, it's not your problem. I'm the one that did it. I'll get it cleaned up here. But the fact of the matter is, we're on the home stretch here, and I'm probably not going to have my dad with me for too much longer. You know, he's 92 and 9 months. We are to the point where we're counting months. He is 92 and 9 months. And, he's still doing fine, but, you know, he's getting weaker. And we've got him a walker. I bought him a walker. That is an instance of, you know, if you take care of the details, life just works better. You know, if you have an idea, I should do this, you should just do it. I know plenty of people that have the right ideas, but as one lady said, they lack activation energy. You know, they lack the execution. And ideas really aren't worth much until you execute. You have to execute. So it was interesting. Dad was talking when he was in the hospital last week. He was talking about, that what I wasn't aware of. I'm watching cars go by and paying attention to things. Sorry, I'm a little distracted. Last week, Dad was talking about how that he was walking with a walker in the hospital and how much easier that was, and how that in recent weeks he had fallen like twice and he hadn't told me. He said, I'm just walking along and all of a sudden I'm turned backwards and I don't even know how that happened and I'm on the floor. So we all decided, you know, might be getting to that time, need to do something. My wife's father has a walker that has four wheels on it, and it has handlebars and a place where you can sit and a little pouch where you can carry things. And the handlebars actually have handbrakes on them. It's a nice walker. We were sitting around in the hospital room talking about that, and my wife said, oh, you should get one of those. I hopped on Amazon and checked it out. It's $50 on Amazon. It was going to be there in 2 days. We weren't really sure when Dad was going to get released. But I thought, well, I'll just swing by Amazon, or I'll just swing by Walmart, because my wife said, well, they do carry these at Walmart. So I thought, well, I'll just swing by Walmart and I'll just pick up whatever walker. She said she was sure they carried walkers. So that Friday morning, I wasn't sure when Dad was getting out of the hospital, but I just thought, I'm going grocery shopping. I'm just going to get what I can get it done, get it in the trunk so we'll have it when we need it. I walk into Walmart, go over to the pharmacy, I'm looking around, can't find anything, but there's a guy there. And so I ask him, do you carry walkers? He said, yeah, he walked me over there. Well, one of these nice ones that my father-in-law has was there, and it was $30 more. So it's $30 more than buying it on Amazon. I could have got it on Amazon. I gotten it shipped 2 days. I would have had it in on Monday. But I thought, no, we just need to get this done. So pick it up, spend an extra $30, get it back to Mom's, because I was staying at Mom and Dad's at that point, you know, watching over my mom while my dad was in the hospital. Got it all put together before we did anything else. Got it put in the trunk of the car to where we'd have it. So we get down there in the morning. They say, oh, you know, it might be getting released. So we wait around for like an hour. There's no word. I finally tell my mom, you know, Mom, let's go ahead and go home. I've got some things I can do at home. I was working on the cover at that point of the book. So let's go ahead and go home. They'll call us. Okay, so we get back in the car. They call us, bring it back. And then, you know, they asked, they said, so when he gets home, does he have a walker? And I said, yeah, he has a walker. We've got that taken care of. Okay, great. See, it's done. It's not, oh, well, I was thinking about doing that, and I was going to do it, and I intended to do it, and I feel so bad about not doing it. Okay, done is done. Anything less than done is not done. You can think about it. You can feel bad about it all day long. It's not done. That's why I always like to get things done. Done. Anyway, so we got him home. I've been changing bile bags and urine bags all week. Dad did get his bile drain out on Thursday. So I just changed his dressing today. That's all looking good. Basically, we just got to get him unhooked from the catheter at this point and get him to where he can pee on his own. And, you know, then it'll just be a matter of him regaining his strength. And then we'll see month over month how we're doing. I mean, there's no question in my mind, especially after staying with my mom all week, there's no question that when my dad passes on, we'll need to move my mom into some kind of a guided, supervised, extended care facility, because her memory's just gone. As I've said before, thank God that she's pleasant. She is so pleasant. And she still has a great attitude, but her memory is just gone. I mean, it's on less than a 30-second loop. When I was staying there, I had an air mattress that I blew up and slept on in the living room. And so I'd go to sleep, and I'd hear Mom come out of the bedroom, and I'd say, "Is everything okay, Mom?" And she'd say, "Yeah, I just need to check the front door to make sure it's locked." So she'd check the front door, and then she'd turn around and go back in the bedroom. And 10, 15 seconds later, she'd come out. "Is everything okay, Mom?" "Yeah, I just need to check and make sure the front door is locked." And she would do that as many times as I would let her do it. And then I'd finally start saying, Mom, you've already checked it. It's good. Oh, okay. And then she'd go back then. Mom, you've already checked it. Oh, okay. You know, Mom, you've already checked it. Oh, okay. You know, and eventually it does sink in, but it just takes multiple times. So she would have a standard set of questions she'd be kind of grooving on. And I would just go ahead and answer all those questions on one sheet of paper in big print, bolded. And then I print 5 or 6 copies of it and just hung those signs all over the house. "Dad is in the hospital. We're not sure when he's coming home. I've been staying with you. It's okay. Lynette doesn't mind. Blah, 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 blah," you know. And then every time she'd ask a question, I'd point to the paragraph on the sign. And then I'd say, "Mom, how is it possible that this piece of paper is answering all the questions you're asking?" And she'd laugh. "Well, I don't know. Did you write it?" "Yeah." She said, "Well, you're just very smart." "I said, no, Mom. You've asked these questions before." "I did?" "Yeah, you just can't remember right now, Mom." "Oh, I know." You know, I mean, it's just, it's a really interesting time of life. So we're in the crux of all that, but everything's going fine. Dad's getting stronger. I expect he's going to hang around with us a little while longer. He's a little discouraged now because he feels weak and useless, but you know, we're gonna be okay. In the little time we have left, there's an article, and I've touched on this in the past, and I don't know what mental connections you have to have to get to the place where this sounds like a reasonable idea. The title of this article is, "What If Everybody Didn't Have to Work to Get Paid?" And this is all about guaranteed basic income. So the advocates say, well, guaranteed basic income can lead to more creative, fulfilling work. We just have to know how to fund it. And the idea is that government, since government really is the only one that could pull this off for everyone, the government should just pay everybody a guaranteed minimum income of like $1,000 a month. The government should just pay everybody. Just give them the money to where they could do what they want. And supposedly, once they do this, everyone will just be so creative because they'll be so free and they'll feel so good about life that they won't have to be worried about getting stuck in dead-end jobs. and it'll just be great. And the first thing that comes to my mind when I say this is, well, that must mean that everyone who is on welfare is the most creative type of people that we've ever met, because they basically have guaranteed personal income. They get money from the government every month. They get food stamps. We should just, I mean, the welfare, the people in the welfare state should just be producing all the best poets, all the best musicians, all the best painters and sculptors. I mean, doesn't that follow if the advocates say that a guaranteed personal income will lead people to be more creative? Now, I don't doubt that some who are campaigning for this, and there are many who are campaigning for this. In fact, some have decided the government's never going to do this. I'm getting my mail. This was the point yesterday when I thought, I haven't done the podcast. Getting my mail. I have no doubt that, it's not time for mail yet, because it's early in the afternoon. But I hear my son-in-law cutting the grass. I have a great son-in-law. There are people that are so convinced that this is a great idea that they're actually conducting experiments where, like, one guy has decided he needs $1,000 a month for his guarantee. And so he started like a Kickstarter campaign, crowdsourcing. He's halfway to his goal of people that are just giving him money every month. Like, well, that would be lovely. But it's just the whole idea. I just look at it and say, all right, but how would that even be possible to just give everybody $1,000 a month? Because you have to have a certain number of people. I'm pulling near the garage. You have to have a certain number of people and take a certain percentage of their income in order to support one person. So how could you possibly support everybody with a guaranteed minimum income? Because the ratio always is like 10 to 1 or 15 to 1 or something that you need. Well, depending on what your tax rate is. If your tax rate is 20 to 1 or is 5 to 1, 20%, then you need at least 5 people to support one person. But then, of course, you got your bureaucracy sitting in there. So you probably need like a 10 to 1 ratio, something like that. So if you need a 10 to 1 ratio, where is that 10 going to come from? And then these guys have their sayings. They say, okay, Scott Santens has been thinking about fish a lot lately. Specifically, he's been reflecting on the aphorism, if you give a man a fish, he eats for a day. If you teach a man to fish, he eats for life. What Satan wants to know is this. If you build a robot to fish, do all men starve or do all men eat? That's a really good question. And my inkling at this point is all men starve. Because someone has to build that robot and they're going to want to be compensated. Someone has to program that robot and they're going to want to be compensated. They're not just going to build robots for the fun of it so they can turn them loose and have everybody who didn't make any effort in that sit around and get paid a guaranteed income. I just cannot see how humanity is going to ever go along with this plan of a guaranteed basic income. I mean, I just... So, for instance, Santen says, it's not just a matter of needing basic income in the future. We need it now. People don't see it, but we are already seeing the effects all around us in the jobs and pay we take and the hours we accept. The extreme inequality is reaching and in the loss of customer spending power. So the article goes on to say, many experts believe that unlike the 20th century, people in this century will not be able to stay one step ahead of automation through education and the occasional skills upgrade. Well, I agree with that. A recent Oxford study warns that 47% of all existing jobs are susceptible to automation within the next 2 decades. Yeah, I agree with that too. That's 20 years. This 20 years is going to be believable. What's interesting is the Swiss are considering a basic income proposal. Most of the candidates in Finland's upcoming parliamentary elections support the idea. So this is going to be interesting. If Europe actually adopts this, it's going to be interesting. But in the U.S., the issue is still a political non-starter for mainstream politicians due to a lingering suspicions about the fairness and practicality of a basic income, as well as a rejection of the premise that automation is actually erasing white-collar jobs. Anyway, so there's also a group of 19,000 basic income advocates in Germany who have funded 11 people so far. See, that's what I'm talking about. It's the ratio. It takes 19,000 contributors to fund 11 people so far. You know, they give them 1,000 euros a month, no strings attached. The first few winners, chosen by lottery, started receiving their basic incomes in September of 2014. The 11th winner was announced May the 7th. And so, and of course, you know, people who are watching this experiment are just delighted. The project worked better than I thought it would. The number of visits and media response was really impressive. Indeed, the stories told by the winners are inspiring. For example, one recipient is using his newfound freedom to write his dissertation. Another winner quit his job at a call center to study to become a teacher. Perhaps one anonymous commentator summed it up best, saying, "I did not realize how unfree we all are." Really? You... You didn't notice that you were having to go into work every day. You were having to do stuff that you didn't necessarily want to do. That's life. That's the way it is in this life. You know, I work 34 hours a week. Now, granted, first of all, there is fulfillment in the work that I do. And I enjoy the people I work with. It is meaningful work. I'm glad to be doing it. I'm helping out an organization that I deeply respect. But if somebody just came in and dropped, you know, $5 million in my lap, I would go in and I would say, okay, we've got 6 months and I'm detangling myself from all this stuff and I'm going to go write books because that's what I do. So it's interesting because they talk about the fact that, you know, the people who need basic income aren't necessarily the ones that are going to generate a lot of sympathy, and so people won't give to it. So government really is going to be the only tool that it's, you know, possible. Is this just going to be a really interesting experiment? You know, supposedly someone said that when people stop working out of fear, they become more productive. Maybe some people do, but I mean, come on. I don't know what the difference between a guaranteed personal income and welfare is. And if that's true, the people who are on welfare should be the most productive people ever. And I have not seen that to be true. And I know enough about human nature that I can't see how it would be true. I mean, I have had to be disciplined and work all my life. And certainly, if something happened to me, I could be much more productive creatively. But being productive creatively doesn't necessarily mean that I would be producing any kind of wealth that could be redistributed. So the way our economics is structured now, you got to have this Three Stooges merry-go-round thing go where Larry gives a dollar to Curly and Curly gives a dollar to Mo and Mo gives a dollar to Larry, because we're just passing around the money. But in the process of passing around the money, we get people to release things to us. You know, so I can go to the store and I can pass my money to the store, and then the store and I get things for that, and then the store passes that on to the clerks, and then the clerks do this and they pass it back to the suppliers, and the suppliers take that and, you know, take stuff out of the ground and pass it. But what lubricates all that and makes all that happen is money. It's money. We are not on a barter system. And there's an only finite supply of that that can be passed around. And so it's almost tilting at windmills for me, this whole guaranteed basic income thing. It's a nice idea, but it won't scale. It just flat will not scale. I just don't see it. So, you know, if Finland gets this going, if Sweden gets this going, this is going to be fascinating to watch. And it is, again, one of those pieces in this whole two-decade, 20-year puzzle that's really, really going to be interesting. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.